Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. I'm Larry Holmes of ESPN New York 98.7 FM. I have the pleasure of talking to you about the man you're about to listen to, Doc Stanley, the legendary Doc Stanley. I always say before him there was none, after him there shall be no more. When you listen to Doc Stanley, you have to appreciate the knowledge, the connection. When he's at the ballpark during baseball, he's around the water cooler talking to the athletes. When he's at the basketball games, he's in the locker room talking to players, talking to general managers, talking to front office personnel to bring you the insight why people make the decisions they make. When he's on the ice skating rink, he's talking to some of the few African-American, African-Canadian, African players who are on the ice right now making a difference. You are listening to Doc Stanley on Sports and Depth.
Thank you. time. As we open every sports and every show, John Coltrane's Dear Lord, as you open with prayer. Dear Lord, thank you for another day. More importantly, happy and growth, happy way. Thank you, Lord, for you. Thank you. Thank you for being on. Thank you, dear Lord, for another day. For South family in Brazil. And in the USA, of course, the world. For South President, Barack Obama. The Brazilian football team is a big win today. No one for you, Lord, to thank you. Cross that we have the right to trip. We ask you first come to you homage and gratitude. Name Jesus. Doc Stanley, Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network. It's our last show from Brazil, as I'll be heading back to New York on New York Studios in a couple of days. We have sort of cut the trip a little short because we want to get back to New York and curtail some things. Mike Bellamy is going to be coming to the Sports in Depth, Trust in God, Entertainment Artifacts Museum, doing a piece on us. We're so proud and thankful to God and Mike, who had a birthday last month. Urban Legends. So we're going to be featured on Urban Legends and some more about Urban Legends. We're going to let one of our own legends bring you into Sports in Depth, and we'll talk some more about a host of things, but without ado, I'm going to let the one and only Mel Cosell Smith Jr., a.k.a. Little Coco, a.k.a. Rooney, welcome you into the Sports in Depth Nation. Rooney, it's showtime.
Well, thank you, good doctor. The Sports in Depth Nation is here. The Sports in Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I'm here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God the Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is here. And that is indeed the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, good doctor.
Thank you, Rudy. And one of the things I want to go up into the engineer booth and thank one only of the legendary Big C. That's his, Big C. He got, this piece of music, Summer Madness, from the gang. I remember seeing
from that's an awesome jam, Doc. I just had to say, that is an awesome jam. It really is.
But it's the finest piece of music they've done. Remember being at the Apollo Theater on a night, I mean, just showed you the kind of show that was there. Cool in the gang. Nancy Wilson and Richard Pryor, and use this intro, a couple of interesting things. Every day you learn something, and statement I had for the radio to fail is when you put a team together, you can play the whole convention. You can have a whole convention without the team. But fail is different. You know, this sort of season, pick the first nine games, retiring, and if I Toma Garcia in the Chiefs Championship, he got a ring. They should put Smart Suit for you, who is the sponsor tonight, you know, for DJ. Love Suit's going to bring all the and follow for the support for this month, and also there'll be Rio de Janeiro, and we'll be able to play for the 14th. One interesting thing today, you know, sail ships. Don't sail on Friday, because it's common. The fact that it was on Friday at Christ School. And last night, talking to my buddy Thomas from California, from Hollywood Times, and his friend, named Mitchell Skate, an actor, he's actually crowded to cast away from Tom Hanks. And he told a fascinating the night before the final vote was due. Billy planned and he called Lady Ripley to violence. And it's when, you know, I had to speak. Listen, I'm trying to keep the whole ground. Beth will know about it. Process Debbie, but they both were so busy that she never did get around. I'm
Things we're going to talk about, Rudy, and glad to hear, as we talked last night with Lady A on our Saturday special segment, and putting our last show live here from Awesome A from Brazil, the capital city of the state of South. Yo, Mookie Blaylock, who we spoke about last night, serious car accident. Now it seems the latest word is that he is out of intensive care. And seems to be doing a whole a lot better. And we want to thank the fans and listeners who are getting well wishes, and more importantly, the press. Blaylock was the number one pick of the New Jersey Nets, and it segues me into the Trust in God Sports and Deaf Internet Halifax Hall of Fame. As we were talking about Michael Bellamy, the sports director of BCAP Sports, and the first African American quarterback in Staten High school football history. Mike talked about a month ago. Mike celebrated the birthday last month, and he was telling me that.
Doc, before you bring Mike in, I'm sorry, Doc, but I have to mention this, otherwise I think I'd be remiss. You know, since you're talking about, you know, former ball players and people who our prayers go out to, I understand that former Nick Tiki Burden is also, I believe, here in the city. He needs a heart, Doc, I believe a liver. So I think he is trying to get a hold of, you know, hope obviously he's a donor or some sort of thing. But he has serious medical issues. So, you know, since you're talking obviously about, you know, the Mookie Blaylock unfortunate accident, I also felt it would be apropos to mention Tiki Burden, former name.
I no question it. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, this is why Sports In Depth brings you sports from an in-depth perspective and a insight that you hear and find no place else. Once again, to give, you know, it was here, Rudy, that we talked about, and I'm still looking for anything in this. Dino, Dusty H. Rack Brown, told us we were going to do a show. We were going to go off, and then flash came that Ken Norton had a heart attack. Never heard another word about that.
Larry Holmes
in the hospital.
Was a blackout on that, Doc? I mean, the way you have to say that you were one of the first huge media people to say, what's with the blackout on Ken Norton? What is this? Guy's a former world champion, obviously a very, very well-known fighter of his day, and he was the first, Doc, to mention, you know, about the mainstream media basically blacking it out.
No, Rooney, let's go a step further. Norton, too, one of the few guys to ever beat Muhammad Ali. Ali beat him in a trilogy, 2 out of 3, as he did Joe Frazier. Another thing here, too, Rooney, you know, dovetail on that, as the great Marion Boykin would say, Marion B. Boykin, Black Bodacious Brilliant Brother, we came behind that and heard that Larry Holmes is in the hospital. Still heard no more about that. Larry Holmes, the second longest reign in the history of the heavyweight division outside of the incomparable Joe Louis. And then just 2-3 weeks ago, and I found this out too, learning to Murray Day, that Iron Barkley, along with Jerry Cooney, has the same birthday as the legendary, the iconic, the incomparable Willie Mays, May 6th. But Barkley, about 2 weeks ago, we reported, had a heart attack, was in the hospital.
And, you know, it's just amazing. Well, at least in the Barclays case, it was validated that he had a heart attack. We hadn't heard anything about Kenny or Larry, and now we still haven't heard any more about Iron Barclay. But these are three guys, Merritt Norton, one of the few guys. In fact, let me see. If I'm correct, Kenny Norton was the second fighter to ever beat Muhammad Ali. If I'm correct, because Ali lost to Frazier. He lost to Norton. He lost to Larry Holmes. And the last
Leon
guy he ever lost to was Leon Spinks and Trevor Burbick. So I think Ali won five fights. And the second guy to ever beat him was Kenny Norton. But that courageous effort of Kenny breaking Ali's jaw and Ali going the whole 12 rounds, broken jaw, coming back to avenge the loss and then beating Kenny Norton in the last ever outdoor fight, not only held in Yankee Stadium, not only held in America, but the last outdoor heavyweight championship fight of the 20th century, winning a close but unanimous decision against Kenny Norton. Kenny, so upset by the loss, cried. And, you know, here's a guy who was the second guy to beat Ali, a guy who, I remember talking to Kenny, and Kenny talked about how much Ali did to save the game. You know, him and Cosell, too, trumping up boxing. What a special era that was, Ronnie. You know, we look back, and we talk Kenny Norton, but at the same time, you know, we're talking Ali, we're talking Joe Frazier. Larry Holmes hadn't come on the scene, but there was Jimmy Young, there was Ron Lyle, there was Foreman. There was just a host of Jerry Corey, just Chuck Webner, a host.
Tough guys, Doc. And one guy,
yeah.
Doc, that nobody ever talks about that was tough as hell, that I believe dropped Joe Frazier twice while fighting him, and that was Ringo, Oscar Bonavina.
Yeah, Oscar Bonavina, amazing thing about him, the watchwoman, George Brown. You know, it was the Bonavina. It's funny that you mentioned that. They're not really with your intellect, no, because, you know, that triangle of Oscar, Joe, and Ali, Oscar drops Joe twice, and in turn, it was Oscar who was the fight that springboard Ali into the Ali-Frazier fight, fought him at the Garden, 15th round, dropped him three times in the last round, to win the knockout in the fight. And if I'm correct, my good buddy, the late legendary, the last great PR man in history of New York City, and Joey Goldstein was the manager of Oscar Bonavena. And the Argentinian, it's funny we talk about that, we say with Argentina, Deja Cotamar talks about, even though he's Brazilian, is that Lionel Messi is the best footballer. And he likes Messi because Messi, unlike his Argentinian peers, doesn't have the mindset that Deja says, the arrogance and the racial mixture. And this, Deja says, is really due to the fact that he was raised in Spain. And with that, we can segue into the fact that Neymar, the greatest footballer right now in Brazil, probably maybe the second greatest footballer to play for Santos. I mean, there's no question that number one is Pelé. And Neymar, as you know, early this week, signed with Barcelona. It was just a foregone conclusion. It was something the last couple of years that had kept being rumored. Right after the Olympics, as Oscar went to Real Madrid, his teammate and Brazilian superstar, and Barcelona, for the longest time, had wanted the great Neymar, so they have finally gotten him. A lot of that has been tribute, as Desio and fans talk about. Santos had won the championship 3 years in a row, as it had happened at the same time in the career of the iconic. Had Neymar beaten Corinthians this year and won it 4 years in a row, it had been something that had never been done by Santos club, and knew the fact that Pelé was on the team that won it 3 years in a row. Neymar was flown by Spain to sign a contract. As I understand it now, you know, today, big win today for the Brazilian football team. They played England 2-1. The Corinthians goal was, Corinthians player scored the second goal. It was ironic, too, because England came back and got a goal in the very closing minutes of the game, and within a less than 2 minute period, Brazil came back and answered and won 2-1. But the great Neymar, a great star from youth, it was even said about, I think he signed a contract about 11, 12 years old. His parents signed him to a contract. But he is now going to Europe, and so he is probably the first great Brazilian star to go there. Adesio had told me that Pelé had been offered so many times to go to Brazil. I remember a friend of mine told me that the Italians put three players on Pelé defensively. Three players on Pelé. But Pelé played his whole 15 years in Brazil. His whole 15 years with Santos. And I remember the piece that I have here. And now the rationale why Pelé was the greatest footballer of all time was because Pelé was the greatest footballer, the best footballer of his generation at a time where the best footballers were Brazilian, and he was playing against the best, his own peers, and it's just a situation that he was the best of the best. And I remember reading the book that Dusty had given me, and when they were talking about football players and everything, when it came to Pelé, they said, simply the best. And you're listening to the best right here on Sports In Depth, Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Government Network. Mel Cosell Smith Jr. is we'll be looking for the Hoopster, and as well as also Cincinnati Seawings to join us on football. Going back real quickly, we were talking about basketball. And, hey, you know, Rooney,
and
a
by
class
the way, Doc, let me just say and let you know, give me right. a quick. Since we cover everything here in Sports In Depth, a wide range of things, both in and out of sports, the thunderstorm has started here in New York City, Doc. The lightning and the thunder is here. The rains are coming down here in New York City. I don't know what the weather is like actually in Brazil now, but here in New York City, the storm has started.
You know, I talked to my mother about 3 hours ago. And we were talking, and we were an hour ahead of you. And it was 9 o'clock, and she said it was supposed to rain today. And I said, Mom, well, you know, the day's not over. And we talked, so evidently it did come about. For those of you who are not familiar with Fortaleza, it's 85 degrees or more every day, no humidity. If it rains in Fortaleza, it rains about 15 minutes and stops. Time-wise here, the sun comes up every day just about at 5:45 and goes down every day just about at 4:45. I mean, you can keep your clock. In fact, you don't need a watch. You know when the sun comes up, it's 5:50. And you know when the sun goes down, it's 5:50. There's no humidity. The amazing thing, 250 miles away from the and you don't have no humidity. And we were talking about the basketball, too. The Pacers have taken the Heat to a seventh and final game. A lot of people feel it could have been over because they should have taken a game, that game that LeBron came and scored. Just a great offensive move by him, finding that crease and having the ability to go to the basket and use the left hand, you know, the mental soundness of LeBron. This is why he's the best. Because of his fundamentals as well as his talent. But a guy who was a great player, his first 6 years in the pro basketball, only Larry Bird and Oscar Robertson had better numbers than the great Grant Hill. And Grant Hill, 19 years in the NBA. I wish he had won another one, but he's going to retire. Wore number 33, was part of the great Duke teams. I remember they talked about his humbleness. Well, one time, you know, his mother was driving him to practice in their brand new Mercedes, and he asked his dad and mom, could they kind of use, you know, the other car so the players wouldn't think he was trying to, you know, be just a little more than what he was. A great player. You know, we always had a little rapport. I'd give him different books, and his dad as always covers the Dallas games here in New York, and I always have a couple of books of literature. I was upset at one time that I didn't have a book, some books for him, as I had forgotten he had signed with the Magic. My daughter was a big Fila sneaker fan, and I remember I got him to autograph a pair of her sneakers, and he said, you know, thanks, tell her thank you for her support. The thing that happened with him, he got that injury. I think it was a combination of misdiagnosed, which made him inadvertently play on it. He was never the same player, but he was definitely a sure ballot, first Hall of Famer. But more on that, you know, Grant Hill in the game is just a Hall of Famer, a special young man. It says a lot about his family, his parents, a class act. And it was said to Rooney that outside of Michael Jordan, and when Michael Jordan left the game, the most popular and renowned player in pro basketball, Rooney, was Grant Hill.
Well, he was certainly on the way to that, Doc. Like I said, if it wasn't for his unfortunate injury, I mean, this guy just would have been all world everything, which he was before the injury. You know, Doc, before we get here, let me say something about the current semifinals and get a word in edgewise here as far as the big controversy over here, Doc, is, and I don't know if it's over there, dude, but obviously if it's anything that has to do with sports, you're on it. LeBron's not getting any help, Doc. We don't know if it's due to the injury to Wade or if it's because of the combination of the injury to Wade and all the wear and tear, you know, on his body through the years, or if he's just getting older and doesn't have it like that anymore. But the fact of the matter is that Bosch hasn't been Bosch, meaning Chris Bosh, their power forward center, and Wade hasn't been Wade. This has basically been the LeBron show, Doc, and while he is at the moment, I probably considered the greatest player in the world, one man is not a teammate, even a great LeBron James. He needs some help, Doc. He's going against a bunch of big, talented, big men who can play the game. They're big, they're quick, they're strong, and they're physical. And at the moment, he's not getting a backup, Doctor. Put it this way, even though obviously since Game 7 is in Miami, obviously that gives them the edge. You know, they're going to get the majority of the calls, and there's no way in hell that LeBron's going to foul out of this game. I'd be absolutely shocked. But the fact of the matter is, it's a strong possibility that they could lose this game, and that, if you ask me, at this point, the pressure's on Miami.
Well, you know, no, there's no question about that. I mean, the consensus is that they should have been 4-2 Indiana. You know, you are just so on the money. Loved our conversation last night with Lady in Boxing. And you know, Reggie Miller comment that LeBron is carrying the Heat Cavaliers.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's just amazing. I mean, I'm not amazed at it, and I don't think SIND viewers, listeners are amazed at you coming up with this. But you know, just coming up with exactly the same thing that Reggie Miller is saying. And I've always said that the key to that team is Bosch, because he could allow LeBron to do certain things and not sort of be shackled. And you were saying here, LeBron is carrying it. He's not with having to pick up the extra responsibilities. There's certain things that he can still do, but he's not allowed to do. Like I said, the Hoopster said when this series started, it was going to be at least a 6-game series. Now it's going to go 7. You know, Wade has been dealing over the course of the last 2 years, Rooney, a horde of injuries. Not only because of the eliteness of his team, playing with LeBron, Bosch, and a core of outstanding players, has he been able to perform the last couple of years. But injuries, you know, he missed a good amount of games both last 2 seasons, but that allowed him to be fresh and ready for the playoffs. Now, it seems that it's not a situation of him being rested and prepared, as he's just not physically there. And at this point, with the kind of game that the Pacers play, the physicality of the game in itself
coupled with the type of game that they play, it seems that it is taking a toll on him. You know, a Maserati with a half a tank of gas can't go as far as a Mustang with a full tank of gas. I think Lady A is going to try to get in with us tonight. We're hoping she can join us. The first lady of SIND.
I'm on, Doc.
Hey, well, I have an attitude with A, and I'm glad she's there right now because I have an attitude with A, and I'm going to tell you why. And I'm going to tell you why I have an attitude with Awesome A, Doc, because she, like you the other show, mocked me when I made the bold statement, and I quote, "I see something." So I... And they let me know how she sees something in regard to the future Alvarez Mayweather fight that we'll talk about later that takes place in September. So I want you to know, hey, I'm glad you're here, but I have a little bit of a tune with you talking about you see something. I see something.
Well,
I think you've been hanging out with Bruce Willis too much, dude. I told you, I think you've been hanging out with Bruce Willis too much. You know, when he says in that movie, "I see dead people." It's too bad. You listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, the first lady of SID Sports. Lady, you know, lady, one thing we can say about this whole Alvarez-Mayweather fight is thank God. Thank God that it's going to happen. You know, too often big fights are not made right away or not made at all or made when it's too late. This is a fight. It seemed like, in all the reality, Lady A, that Alvarez was talking about.
Hello?
So much so that he pulled and went his own way, and it just seemed that right now he didn't have nothing to worry about, but it seemed that there were some concerns, and a couple of weeks ago, people were talking about they didn't see Alvarez Mayweather happening for a host of reasons. Alvarez wasn't ready. More importantly, Mayweather and Alvarez wouldn't come together on the catchweight. Lady A, I want to expound on something. I want to expound on something, and Rooney, you come right behind her. But I think, you know, and Rooney said something last night, because he's always saying something, but he talked about give people quality fights. Give people fair fights. Give people something that is worth the money they're paying, and they will come. And I think at the forefront of all this is we have to take our hats off to Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy. You know, Lou DiBella griped a little bit about Oscar coming into the Barclays Center and didn't understand how the guy from the West Coast could come in and beat an East Coast guy to jail. Lady A, Oscar De La Hoya, the Golden Boy, has had the Midas touch and has been advantageous to the game of boxing.
I agree, Doc. I think we talked about it last night. I brought it up because I felt that the comparison that we had made a few shows ago with Harold Weston and how in the past he had spoken about how much Madison Square Garden had something similar to that way back when and how he was a part of it. And and he alluded to how he felt like those characteristics that they had back then in boxing have not transcended into what boxing is today. But I've said, especially in prior shows, now with what you mentioned about DiBella, DiBella's been around for a while, and he has not made the fights that we have seen, and I say that loosely, within the last month or two. And Rooney, you mentioned that before to me. And I think that that is what fight fans want. They talk about it all the time. And if he can maintain that from now on with Bernard Hopkins, I think that the future is going to look a lot brighter for Golden Boy. Now, I also want to say one more thing. It's not just that they've been able to put together fights, but also been able to forge those relationships with Mayweather Cotto, and now it was even just brought to my attention with Jesse James Leja, former boxer who now has a promotional company in Texas. So,
now, Lady A, is that a combination of not only respect for Oscar, but guys being able to relate to somebody who's been there? He was another fighter. You know, they're not dealing with somebody who has no idea what the sport is about, and is sort of an outsider. Is Oscar being a fighter the fighters more receptive to him, and it seems to be maybe trust him more? Is that the word I'm looking for? Trust?
I think it's a combination of a few things. I think you got to look at. De La Hoya was in boxing when you had, like, he actually experienced some of the stuff Bob Arum was doing, King was doing, and a lot of the other promoters that have been in the game, you know, and he kind of was able to see at that level what they were doing as far as elevating boxing and, you know, and some of the things that they were doing that was working back then. So him having that exposure to that, I think, especially at a young age, Doc. I mean, let's face it, he was very young when he won the gold medal, right? And he's been in boxing for long enough to see and be around all these faces, and he's not a newcomer, you know? And he's fought the best, Doc. He's been in the ring with the best, you know? So I think that he's fought
is,
that.
Is all-time
into,
great,
into.
And the thing, and when... And at one time I told Oscar, I said, you know, your problem is that your best fighter in Golden Boy was him. But it seems you said a combination of both. And he, you know, I am my brother's keeper. Service to others is rent you pay for your space here on earth. Muhammad Ali. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Our life is not important except for the impact it has on other life. Jack Roosevelt Robinson. And you know, I look at Oscar. And it's for self. Came in, he did a great job to handle the business. You know, it's like, hey, man, you know, I need a relief pitcher. I got Mariano. At the same time, he opened the news, brought Bernard in, an executive, Sugar Shane Mosley as an executive, you know, jobs.
Yeah, Doc, what the lady ain't do to chase your way this time? Are you there?
I think what he's alluding to is just that, you know, the exposure that De La Hoya has had in boxing, and now what he's trying to do now is that he's kind of been able to kind of recognize, you know, those things that you need to do to kind of keep boxing where it's at. And I think that because his company was fairly new, compared to a lot of the other companies that have been in boxing for, what, 20, 30, 40 years already, right?
Indeed.
His company's been active for, like, 10 years, because I think Bernard, when I was interviewing Bernard, I think he said it was, like, what, 7 years? 8 years?
Right.
Something like
yeah,
that.
I think so.
So I think that now they're starting to kind of get a feel for what they need to do to keep that fan base.
Well, the thing I like about Oscar and being in the promoting game, Awesome A is this. The fact that, like you said, he's been there, done that. He knows who can fight. He knows who can't fight. He knows what the premier matchups would be in the fights that should make for good rumbles and what fans want to see. But at the same time, he has the financial wherewithal to make these fights and pay these people.
And you add another point, Rooney, is that Oscar has an eye for talent, which is one of the great attributes that Don King always had. But sometimes the people closer to you, first, me and my mother were talking tonight that, you know, some of the dumbest people in the world are people with college degrees, you know, some of the smartest people that don't have a sheepskin. But Oscar, another attribute that you're adding, and we're adding to his resume, is good nose talent. He does a great job, too, at his press conferences. But beyond being a guy who's an elite fighter, beyond being a guy who's become a elite promoter, he has an eye for talent and knows, well, look at his card, some of the guys that he's gotten. That's good. I know he,
you know, one of the things I wanted to add to Rooney, and I guess you could piggyback on this, is that not only has he had, you know, the exposure and kind of been, you know, been around for quite some time, you know, but also realize that a lot of the guys that he's forging these relationships with were all former fighters under Bob Arum, Miguel Cotto, Mayweather, and I think maybe even Jesse James Leha. I think he fought. I don't want to say that affirmatively, but you know, these are all guys that have had also ties to him. So, you know, now with Mayweather having his company and Cotto doing, you know, really well in Puerto Rico with his promotional company, and yeah, I wonder what the future holds for what Golden Boy is going to do as far as, you know, attempting to make some of these fights that people really want to see. I actually like it.
The new blood in the boxing business as far as promotion is concerned, I like it, I like it an awful lot.
And here's the thing, too. You're not talking about a promoter that hasn't been in the ring, because when I was speaking to Bernard Hopkins at the post fight press conference for Judah and Garcia, he mentioned something to me that kind of stayed with me, and it was that, you know, hey, you know, Bruce Boga is gonna let you fight your fight in there. And how does he know that? Because he's been in the ring when Bruce Smoker has been a referee. So, you know, in picking like these referees that are going to kind of be in there and let guys fight, to some degree you wonder if they have when they make these fights, they have an idea, you know, what they're looking at when they see these referees in there, which is I think another positive thing for boxing. Because if you have a guy in there that's going to be refereeing a fight, you're like, oh, wow, I don't know about this referee. You know, I don't know how this fight's going to end up. But if you have a guy in there that you know is going to kind of let guys box and do what they do when it's a quality fight, like what we saw a couple of weeks ago with Judah and Garcia, you know, you could kind of tell yourself, wow, I'm going to see a real fight today because this guy's going to actually let these guys box. So,
you know something, Lady A, to piggyback on that, Doc, and Awesome A, you know, like I said, boxing, the only reason that boxing has had this low for these years is because the fans really weren't getting quality fights. I mean, how are you going to charge $50, $55, $60 via pay-per-view?
No, I just got my bill. Relax. I just got my bill for the Mayweather fight. It was $70. Thank you.
Well, I mean, Lady A, Doc, how are you going to have to charge the people for their hard-earned dollars, $50, $55, $60, $65, and you give them maybe one half-ass, pardon the expression, decent fight on the card? The undercard is lousy. Half the time the decisions from the judges are lousy. I mean, folks want to know that when they pay their hard-earned money, number one, you guys are going to have a quality contest, and number two, that the post person, if it goes to a decision, who's supposed to get the decision, gets the decision. That's all the folks ask. They're not asking for one arm and leg.
There's two schools of thought here. First of all, you know, nobody makes you pay for pay-per-view. Okay? So, and absolutely, no, nobody. Now, a pay-per-view Mayweather fight is an event. You know, you want to see Mayweather. It's an event. It's a happening. So King is the guy that always has a standing fight card. Never forget Robert Lee Jr. I'm out in Vegas, and I want to also thank them once again. They were the first African-American organization to honor me. That was in 1998, Sports Reporter of the Year winner. And Bernard Hopkins sat at my table. We hobnobbed and had lunch together. And I remember it was the first Friday night, and I see Robert Lee in this hurried state. And I said, Bob, where are you going? He said, you know, I said, it's the first fight. He said, yeah. And it's a title fight, First fight on the card. This is what King gave you. I think Top Rank was known to give you nothing until the main. I mean, they had a card one night. Remember we went there, Lady A? They had about 80 fights, and you know, you left at about 4 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, pay-per-view is I guess it's a situation that nobody makes you pay pay-per-view. Mayweather is an event. He's a happening. That last card he had was a good card. I mean, all three fights were championship fights. All three fights were quality fights. It's what you alluded to, Rooney. Give the people what they want. And still,
and they will come, Doc, and they will come.
Well, yeah, well, you know, well, my cats always said, you know, building, they will come regardless. I think $70, it's a wee bit too much, though. You know, 70 smackaroonies is a wee bit too much. But, you know, if you can ask it, and if they're willing to pay. But, again, let's take a quick break. Let me look at the board, the names up there. I've got to see how Tiger Woods did at the memorial. We are also saluting Grant Hill. He has 19 years in NBA. He was the co-rookie of the year his first year with
Wow, 19 years already?
19 years. He was co-rookie. I remember sitting courtside at Madison Square Garden. He was sitting
and I
there.
Remember, and you remember sitting at Madison Square Garden, and I remember when he first came out with those high-top Felas.
Yeah, yeah.
The
yeah,
high-top yeah. Felas.
Well,
the Fila sneakers.
Because my daughter liked those sneakers. You know, Demony was, she was great because Demony, her feet were so small that she could always get the smallest size with the greatest price. And I remember telling Grant that she was a devout Fila fan, and I bought a pair of her sneakers. He autographed them for her, and he at the same time said, thanks so much for the support. The Felas, in fact, once again, the Trust in God Sports Net Entertainment Artifacts Hall of Fame has three pair of Grant autographs, as well as a autographed GQ cover of the guy. After his first 6 years in the NBA, only Oscar Palmer Robinson and Larry Bird had better numbers. Staying with basketball real quick, we, again, salute Grant Hill for retiring. Our prayers, and we're happy, thank God, that Mookie Blaylock, they said, is recovering and feeling better. And there was a documentary today, not a documentary, but it's got online, Walt Frazier, and Klein said some very interesting things, and one of them was that Dick Barnett was his idol. You know, Barnett, 8 years older than him. Barnett was one of the great collegiate players coming from the South. Clyde also talked about the fact that, you know, the first NBA basketball game he ever saw was the one he played in. The first NBA basketball game, he came to the NIT, I remember SIU, and he thought, man, he said he had provocative, that he said fans of basketball. He said he thought how great it would be to play in New York, never dreaming remotely that he would get picked by the Knicks. And people don't remember is that just like Jerry West and Oscar Robertson, Walt Frazier was a forward, All-American forward, who came into the pros and moved very easily into the guard spot. Only Oscar Robertson is a better all-around guard, not by that much than Walt Frazier. Frazier talked too about how before he got a lot of playing time, they put him in the game. So he said Hal Greer made him cry. He said he fouled out with about 4 minutes left. He said, but being ingested and indoctrinated into defense way back in grade school, he said when him and DeBuscher, when DeBuscher was traded to the Knicks, with them two on the floor, and their zeal and ability to play defense and to be offensive players, it was a really step up into what made the Knicks one of the great teams. He looked back and he said, he played with 6'5" Hall of Famers. You know, Earl, and him and Earl was the greatest backcourt that ever lived, the Rolls Royce backcourt.
My favorite ball player of all time, if I may say, Doc. You know that. You know, we had the opportunity. Oh. I remember us having lunch at the Garden. I'll be brief, Doc. We're having lunch at the Garden waiting for some Nick game, lunch, dinner, whatever it was. And we're having a little bite, you know, getting ready to, you know, go through our notes, you know, about the upcoming game that was going to start in an hour or so. And who walks in but my all-time favorite ball player, Oil the Poil Monroe. I almost fainted.
What I remember about Earl is when the Nets played the Knicks in junior year, they played at the Garden. So they played two games, one in the Garden, and they played one in the Nassau Coliseum. The New York Knicks and New York Nets at that time. I remember Brian Taylor talking about Earl Monroe, and what he said, he said he's a pearl of a player and pearl of a person off the basketball court. And once again, and I'm running quickly in and out the Justin Guard Sports Entertainment Hall of Fame Museum. I remember Earl played a Nick Legend games, and I asked him for the uniform, and I remember like the whole uniform he said, and that is one of my most prized possessions. Is the autographed Earl Monroe game used Legends jersey, and he gave me a low cut autographed sneaker. I told you we had some Grand Hill sneakers in there. Walt Frazier gave me his sneakers from the night he scored his 10,000 point. I have those also mounted in the museum. But I talked about yeah.
You're not gonna tell him what my favorite things are in your collection.
Are you talking about the Gordie Howe hockey stick?
Oh my God, Doc! I got dibs on that, Doc.
you got it. So, you know, Gordie Howe is such a great guy. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I was just you mentioned that I had just met some athletes. But, you know, I think I met all the greatest African American. I didn't meet Jack Robinson, but the guy said, "Well, have you ever met Wayne Gretzky?" And I said, "Yeah, I've met." He said, "What?" And Gretzky, another one of the great human beings, and Larry Hardesty, and he's the voice that opens here on Sports in Depth. Larry Hardesty, ESPN's sideline reporter for the Jets and ESPN's sports reporter in general, the greatest African-American sportscast in the history of African radio. I mean, Hal Jackson was Jackie Robinson, was Larry with the longest longevity. It was Larry who bridged the gap between African-Americans and non-African-Americans as he had a horde on his show. And Larry, greatest African-American sportscast in the history of African-American radio, the great Larry the Legend Hardesty. And Larry told me that in covering, because he first got the ESPN, he covered hockey. And he said they're just some of the greatest people, gracious, understanding. He said, you'll be doing an interview, and you may say, that's a long drive to right center field. And they said, yeah, I did hit it pretty well, the left center. And I remember the first time I met Rod Gilbert, the great Rod Gilbert, first Ranger to have his number retired. And part of that gag line.
Don't tell me you have some of his too, Doc. Don't tell me you have some from the Rangers, because we're going to end up fighting. Because you know how much of a Rangers fan I am. You don't have it. You don't have his stuff too now. Does he have his stuff, Rooney, really? Does he, Rooney?
I have.
You've seen Doc's incredible collection as well as I have. I mean, let me just say this, Doc, not to interrupt because I know you're about to make a point.
No, I know. I'm not finished with my point.
Let me make this point. Not only were you impressed, and not only was I impressed, but and Doc's so humble that he never would mention this, but you and I know the backstory behind this. This Smithsonian Institute people almost painted an admiring Doc's collection. Does he have it? You're damn right he does.
I have to make this point. I think there's something wrong when Doc doesn't even know all the baseballs he has in his fish tank. I was pulling them out, and I was like, oh, my God, you have this? He's like, oh, yeah, let me look at that. What do you mean, oh, yeah, let me look at that? Do you know who this is? It's Tom Seaver.
What's funny, she's right, because I pulled out a baseball.
I know I'm right.
I pulled out a baseball, and you know, it shows you how Doc Stanley Block Talk Radio, the Trust and Guard Network, live again from Fortaleza, capital city from CI. Sports Today brought to you again by DJ Productions, Deso Cotamassa Jr., Hotel Park, and the Best Streets of Hotel, all of Brazil, Tabajara, Sally Braza, Louis Souza's number one restaurant here, and Shapito. You know, it shows you how the guys of yesteryear, when autographs weren't a problem and you could just get them. And I remember pulling up a baseball. And Lady A said, you know, it's hanging around the house. And I looked on the baseball, and just for some of the names that staggered. Warren Spahn was on the ball. Winningest left-hand pitcher in the history of baseball. Early Wynn, who won 300 games, was on the ball. And I looked at this looks familiar. It Duke Snider and Mickey Mantle. One of the balls, the first baseball, I remember going out to Shea Stadium when I was with WSS Radio. First got into radio, the broadcasting station that I went to graduate from it. And the guys set me up in a booth, and I grabbed the baseball. And I just, you know, those days you had no problem. Handed to the guy. Willie Mays signed the ball. Orlando Cepeda signed the ball. Tom Seaver signed the ball. Hank Aaron signed the ball. Eddie Matthews signed the ball. The thing that you look at, and thanks so much, Reno, I am doing some talk with the Smithsonian. The thing that gets me is they have these companies that come in and validate your stuff. And I'm saying, you know, why am I going to pay somebody to tell me that Willie Mays signed this for me? Why am I going to have to pay somebody to tell me that Lawrence Taylor gave me these fights?
Can you tell Rooney what happened, Doc? Can you tell Rooney? I cried in Doc's house. True, no, I'm not lying. I cried. I saw the ball.
Oh, hey, because we talked later that day. You were so emotional.
I cried because every single person that is on one of these items, Doc's actually had a part in their life. Or a time capsule, like just whether it was 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 10 minutes, oh, forget it.
Yeah,
like
all
that,
those
my,
have
Doc,
an incredible story Doc, in its own right, eh?
Doc, am I being honest or what, Doc?
No, no, you. I say the thing that I have been most blessed in, it was something John Kane. It wasn't anything that I looked at. So Steve Glazer and Jimmy Nesville said the same thing. Nesville, in his letter to the Smithsonian, said, hey, you know, Doc has a time capsule of a span of the late 70s to the early 90s, which not only enhances sports, but it enhances African-American history. And you know, as I have ventured off some of the sport. I have an autographed Miles Davis album. You know, I met the great
Gloria Gaynor, too, Doc, you got?
Oh, well
Gloria Gaynor.
Gloria Gaynor, me and her husband, we were peace officers together. The thing that stands about Gloria Gaynor is the only disco artist ever to win a Grammy. Now, it's an amazing story, and I'm here at DJ Production Studio. I mean, there's a course of my little football, soccer, as we say here. And first time coming to Brazil, I was working with Cliffside Music, and we did a 8-concert, 7-city tour, São Paulo, Porto Alegre, Fortaleza, Manaus, Belém, Goiânia, Brasília. And San Paulo's traffic is worse than you can envision. And they're having problems with traffic 7 o'clock. They do what they call a vigil. Certain time of the day, even cars can't ride in the streets and vice versa for art. Well, they call Mr. Cotamacio and they said, look, we're having a party this Thursday. We're here with Luis Gaines in town. We'd like her to come to the fair. And Desio said, well, you know, you just happened to pick the bad night. That's our opening night. You know, we're opening. We got a show at 11 o'clock. You know how bad the traffic is here. And you know, we'd have to leave the hotel about 6 o'clock. And Mr. Simon had told me before I left, he said, look, grab a tuxedo because you may have to go to an affair. They told Mr. Cotamacio, look, if Ms. Gaynor can come, we'll send a helicopter to pick you all up. They sent a helicopter to pick us up and flew us to the affair. It was
that's big in Brazil. That's
yeah,
big
oh, yeah.
in Brazil.
Well,
when I was in Sao Paulo, I couldn't believe it. It's big. Helicopters are big there.
If I'm correct, Sao Paulo may have the second largest heliport in the world. And right.
Yeah, no, it's big.
Right.
It's big out there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They had no problem. I mean, they shot that to us. They landed on top of her suite. Cotamacio put her in this presidential suite. And a couple of things. I have a couple of autographed albums by her, of course. Some towels that she had in events. But you talk about the point, too, is as I look back, how God has blessed me, I mean, to have chatted with not only Joe DiMaggio, but Satchel Paige, Jesse Owens, you know, for Barry Bonds to tell me that I have more stuff than his family has, for Dave Rigetti to give me the spice off his feet that he used the whole year. We have the three pair of Michael Jordan sneakers, you know, two
you
of
got,
the three pair.
You got a
pair.
Few Jeter cleats there, too, Doc. Jeter cleats, remember you showed me those, the Jeter cleats?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, me and Derek were very close in the early part of his career because I covered so many games, and I always say about Derek, Derek Jeter wears number two because it's apropos. He's second to none as a player, as a person. Everything Joe DiMaggio was supposed to be and everything Mickey Mantle was, a real live American hero. And you know, Derek is he reminds me so much of Jackie Robinson. And one of Jackie Robinson's great quotes, I quote the other one: "Life is not important except for the impact it has on another life." And one of Jackie's quotes, I remember sitting out in the old legendary Shea Stadium, and they were putting quotes up on the board. And Jackie, one of Jackie's quotes came up, and it said, "Above all else, I hate to lose." And I remember after the Yankees had clinched the pennant for about the ninth year in a row, and somebody had asked Derek, you know, does it get old? And Derek said, this doesn't ever get old. This doesn't ever get old. You know, they talked about, I remember back in the day when stickball was king in the streets of New York City, and the legendary Melly May, greatest
in the Bronx, what? The Bronx, they play stickball a lot.
Yeah, in Brooklyn they played, they played every kind of conceivable way of pitching, bouncing, hitting yourself, and the legendary Billy Bang Bang the legendary Melly Mays, and he said, he remember coming down the street one day, and Melly was screaming, said, "Come on, take two, let's go, and the guy just scored." Melly, yeah. And he said, "What's the score, Melly?" He said, 19-2. He said, Melly always loved a good slay, you know what I mean? And you're right. I probably got to sit down and do a book. As I see things, it's amazing that the stories come back. The first Jim Rice bat, and never knowing that we become players, or the fact that Jim Rice is the Jackie Robinson of players to get in on their last year. It should have took Jim Rice 15 minutes to get in, but he's the first African American player to get in on his last year of eligibility. And also, in whole history of baseball, only two guys have ever had 3 years in a row where they averaged 40 home runs, 200 hits. 200 hits now. Okay, 100 scored runs, 100 RBIs, a 300 batting average, 20-something odd
doubles.
Those
are crazy numbers, Doctor. Before you finish, those are crazy numbers, Doc.
Yeah,
crazy.
Of course they are.
Yeah. And but it's amazing that Jim Rice got in on his last year of eligibility. I mean, it should have took 15 years for Jim Rice to get into the Hall of Fame. And some people talk about his demeanor. It was said it was then reevaluated that after the steroid era. I mean, when Jim Rice left baseball, he retired as the man with the most home runs of his era and the most runs batted in. But I mean, we're talking about a 4-year period of 200 hits, 3 years in a row. Three years in a row and 40 home runs. 40 home runs. I mean, you know, the boxing jacket is one of the
prizes. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. That jacket's ridiculous.
It was one of the things that I pride about, too, and thanks for letting me get in there, is the Leroy Neiman reprints that I had. You know, Leroy's passion was boxing. And I was able, Ollie Frazier won fight. Press kit from Ollie Frazier won, autographed by both Leroy and Joe.
The shoes, Doc. The shoes he gave you.
That's a story in itself. You know, Leroy, I would see Leroy maybe 2-3 times a month, go by the studio and we'd talk. And also I'd send stuff over, autograph. And as I'm telling you, I'm walking down the street one day and I see a pair of white loafers in the top of the trash can. And I look and they're nice. The only thing is that somebody on one of the lapels has written in ink pen. So I said, you know what, somebody can wear these in Brazil. You know, they're nice taking to Brazil. And then I thought, I said, Dad, you know what, I'm going to ask Leroy if, man, and you know, this year, the latter part of this month, his birthday is on the 8th. And I said, I'm going to ask Leroy, Hoops' birthday, I believe it's tomorrow, the next day, happy birthday. And I asked Leroy, just to simply, when he's painting, just put some of the residue of the brush in that little area. And I gave him, and he said, yeah, I'll do it, Mel. And I called, as I would do 3 or 4 times in the week. Hello, yeah, can I speak to Leroy? And his wife picked up, Janet. Hello, can I speak to Leroy? And she says, yes. And she said, Mel, Leroy doesn't do shoes. And I said, well, no, okay, no. I'm, you know, Leroy's my friend. I'm not pressing for that, no problem. And so about 2 weeks later, 2-3 days later, Lynn, we call the Leroy's Angels, God Angel, Lynn Quayle, call me, Mel, your stuff is downstairs waiting for you. And I, you know, maybe had an autograph book or a picture. And I figured, you know, the shoes, you know, he's not going to do the shoes. He did the shoes. And this, I think, is you know, there's certain things I have, I think nobody else in the world has. Those, a pair of Leroy Neiman loafers painted, nobody else in the world has.
I just think nobody else in the world has that. And it's not so much about it means so much more with the loss of my dear friend, but the uniqueness of it and the fact that it was something done and, you know, and given to me by a friend. Barry Bonds, I remember giving me his batting gloves, and he said, "Hey, I'm going to show you something now so you'll know that these are mine, you know. This is what you have to know, that they're not forgeries." Because they told me, you know, Barry was the kind of guy, you know, he didn't give a lot of things. That three of his bats, two of his batting gloves, autographed the glove for me. My great line of mother says, you know, only price will last. And the collection has been something that is just I've amassed over the years. I've deviated some from Miles Davis and the Dizzy Gillespie album and the Aretha Franklin album. But, you know, I was blessed. The people who gave these things to me, they gave them to me. They liked me for whatever reason. Eddie Murray, you know, in the whole history of baseball, you only got four people who hit over 500 home runs, 500 doubles, and got 3,000 bases. All of them are African-American. The legendary and incomparable Willie Mays, followed by Hank Aaron, followed by Eddie Murray, followed by Rafael Palmeiro. Palmeiro being the only left-handed batter to do it, and Hispanic. Eddie Murray, the only switch hitter to do it. We have in the Trust in God Sports Network Hall of Fame autographed bats by Murray and also Palmeiro. We have some autographed Hank Aaron stuff. We have some autographed Willie Mays stuff. I always tried to work from a unique perspective. I got a Babe Ruth model bat, and my idea was to get home run champions to autograph the bat, and at the same time to get gentlemen who had done unique things home run wise. So in doing that, Bonds and Ken Griffey Jr., they autographed as home run champions. But I got Tony Clonager, a pitcher, who's one of the few guys to ever hit two grand slams in one game. He autographed the bat. Andrew Jones, youngest man in the 20th century to hit a home run in the World Series. I got Ricky Henderson, most home runs hit by a leadoff hitter in history of baseball. So, you know, those kind of things I tried to do. The Smithsonian is looking for 3D objects, so we're looking to put together a hoard of nice things. My prized possession is a pair of autographed Converse sneakers by Oscar Robertson that say Oscar Robertson. And, you know, I just think, you know, some of those things, I go through things sometimes. I have it, like Lady A said, I had a book, Neil Leifer's Stars, and I've had the book for 30 years. I said I will try in the ensuing years, as I ran into these athletes, to have an autograph of their picture. And I looked at it, and in that book, I got Mickey Mantle autographed it. You know how Mickey Mantle is like, Joe DiMaggio autograph is there, Ali, Joe Frazier, Pelé is in the book, John McEnroe. I got on the front the first African-American to win a Grand Slam tennis tournament, Althea Gibson. Michael Spinks, the first light heavyweight champion to ever win heavyweight championship of the world. Your guy, Mike Tyson. It's just a host of different things. A lot of people, you can go to DocStandardSports.com, take a peek, and you'll see a host of the things that are there, DocStandardSports.com, and you hit that, and you see some of the things we have. It's things given to me by friends, other professionals, you know, and admirers. I got a bobblehead doll photographed by Tom Seaver. And Seaver, in talking about around the batting cage one day, and I said, "Wow, if you were around today, you could win 500 games." And I remember Tom said, "That's bullshit." Tom said, "You know, you got to pitch every fourth day, and you got to go 7 innings each time you go out." And he told me this story. He has admiration for Dusty Baker. He told me, he said, I blew Dusty's mind one time. He said, you know, Dusty came up, hit a home run off me, and when he came up the next time, I threw him the same pitch. And Dusty told me, Dusty said it just blew his mind for a week. He couldn't understand how he could get the same pitch that he had hit out. Joe DiMaggio told me that the older he got, the harder he was to hit. And Dusty told me that because Satchel was on the Braves at an advanced age, but they were trying to get him enough years for the baseball pension, he said Mr. Page would throw pitch batting practice, and he said, you know, we couldn't do nothing with him.
But like I said, thanks a lot for this time I could talk about with this, Sports in Depth, Trust in God, Sports in Depth, Entertainment, Artifacts Hall of Fame. Like I said, I have ventured off from Soli Sports. We have some timbales, sticks autographed by Tito Puente. You know, people don't know that the timbale actually was in the back of the band. And Tito told me how it became to be in the front of the band because as the band leader, they always had to turn around and look at him to get the signal. One day he said, hey, man, you know what? Why don't you just come up front so you can give us a signal? And that is how inadvertently the timbales came to be put in the front of the band instead of the back of the band. But he autographed a couple of timbale sticks for me. It was a good buddy of mine. We have, like I said, autographed Ella Fitzgerald picture, Al Green, Miles Davis, Dizzy Gillespie album, Aretha Franklin, The Whispers, one of my favorite groups, Nancy Wilson, one of my favorite ladies. What's going on, album? I have autographed personally by Lynn Bonney. Lynn Bonney, if you ever hear What's Going On, the first thing is, hey, man, this is a swinging party, man. Yeah, yeah. Well, those two voices is Mel Farr and Lynn Bonney, who's a Hall of Fame cornerback. I don't know if a lot of people know that, but Marvin Gaye had considered becoming a professional football player. And the Lions had agreed to give Marv a tryout. And Marv did all the workouts and everything necessary. But when it came time for the tryout, the head coach of the Lions felt that as a talent, Marvin was far too talented of a singer to be regulated to the football field. They told the story that when Marvin Gaye first played the Apollo, he was AFK, and came up to the Apollo, saw his name up on the board, and got back on the plane and left. I don't know how true that particular story is. But Ella Fitzgerald, a lot of people don't know, the night that Ella Fitzgerald won the amateur contest, it was the first time a female had ever won the contest. The twist of that is that Ella Fitzgerald was a dancer. But the young lady had tore the house down, and the legendary Ralph Cooper, it was the Apollo Theater that came up with the concept of MCs, and Cooper turned to her and said, you know, I don't think you can top that. Can you sing? And she went out, won the contest singing. Chick Webb was in the audience. He, in turn, signed her to his band, and they were later married. Chick Webb and Ella Fitzgerald were married. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and God Network. Talking a little bit about the museum. We're live from Fourth of Ladies of Brazil. It'll be our last show. You heard us last night. We're giving you back-to-back shows. The First Lady of SIND Sports is here. The one and only Melco Self-Smith Jr. is here. We're talking about a host of things. Once again, Sali Brazza Restaurant and also Chipito's Marina Park and DJG Productions, which are going to bring you Billy Paul. Billy Paul will be in Fourth of Ladies on the 14th of this month. He has become the, let's say, you know, Valentine's Day here is on the 12th of June. So every year, he's somewhere in Brazil. Usually in San Paulo, which will be on the 12th at midnight, and he'll be back later that day when he's here. Pretty cool.
Before we start, he's called Namorado to Valentine. But it's Evans, Paulo, Work, Mrs. Cook. Well, you're a dear at Farah Cook.
We meet every day.
14th, at the same
cafe. 6:30.
15th, Regina.
No one knows you.
Coffee, Watanabe. Yanya's
Yanya's
Brazil 2-1 victory today over England. But you know, there is it was a 2-2 tie.
Oh really?
Oh, I didn't see that. I did see the 2-2. I sort of. All right, I thought it was 2-1. Okay, so I missed this one. You know, I did see the 2-2. I didn't see England scored both goals in the second half.
Yes,
I didn't see the second goal. But okay, that even is even more now. I mean, there was a big uproar. The coach didn't put on Ronaldinho. He didn't put on Kaká. I think the two best goalkeepers in all of football is Corinthians, our team, and Santos. You know, let's be honest. People are not happy with this team, and they're not happy with the pressure that it puts on Neymar.
It's true. Yes, he can put a better team together, but you know, I think his bet is to be confident and control the group. And Kaká and Ronaldo, I hope they come back. They can come back for the World Cup. You know, he make few mistakes today. This goalkeeper used to be a great goalkeeper, but not anymore. The two goalkeepers you did mention, they are very good. Also, the substitute we have, Jefferson, he's very good goalkeeper too. So Brazil played better on the first half, but all the goals was in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the Paulinho, pay attention to this name, number 8 for Brazilian national team, for our team Corinthians, he scored. And, you know, I think Filipão have to give him more chance for talent players. I know it's hard. I know he don't choose a kind of experienced guys like Kaká and Ronaldinho, but, you know, the people is not happy yet.
No. Well, I'm not happy. I mean, yeah. I've learned again. Can you give us, what's the feeling of Neymar going to Barcelona? Is there a feeling that he betrayed Brazil, or are they happy? He's going to make more money, he's going to play with me. What's the feeling? Do the Brazilians feel that Neymar left them, betrayed them?
You know, not really. Neymar is supposed to be in Barcelona almost 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
when he just, you know, became a big star.
Mm-hmm.
But Santos makes some agreements and sponsors and keep him until this time.
Mm.
But Neymar and Santos contract supposed to be over in 1 year. So if it be over in 1 year, Santos not going to make no money.
Mm-hmm.
So Barcelona pay like the penalty for Santos,
mm-hmm.
and set up a good deal with Neymar. I think it's the right time, financial-wise, the right time to go to Barcelona.
Mm.
And then in Europe, he's going to learn he's a great player, great talent, but at the same time, he fails too much.
Popcorn.
Yeah, popcorn sometimes. There he cannot be too popcorn. So, you know, and once again, we are Corinthians, baby, and Neymar, Corinthians was responsible for Neymar making the decision because we beat Santos, Neymar, and everybody on São Paulo League, you know? And make it to coach gave up too, you know. So we make a little mess on Santos because we beat Santos with Neymar, and we don't have no problem about England.
Mm.
So Paulinho scored today, and the Corinthians beat Chelsea last year for the World Championship. So, you know, so I think Filipão, our coach, most to keep some like. Send me 2-3 players from Corinthians, 2-3 players from Santos, you know, 2-3 players from Atlético Mineiro.
People,
you know,
people
put them more together.
Yeah.
Who knows each other?
You play each other, yeah.
You know,
sure.
The defense is okay, decided the goalkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
But at the middle for the attack, he must make a compact,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, but, you know, I hope it works. I don't know.
That's your last question. Neymar is going to go with Messi. Messi's number one player in the world. Can Neymar ever become the number one player in the world?
I think so, because Neymar had won. I think right now, as a Brazilian, as a very well-known soccer, I used to play for second division a long time ago, but I know football, I know soccer. Right now, Messi is the best soccer player in the world,
mm-hmm.
no doubt about it.
Why?
He's more, he has almost same quality Neymar has. and he's more, I'll say, he don't play around. He go forward.
Yeah.
You know, he's more
determined.
And Neymar have one thing, and Messi don't have. Neymar start kick with the left foot. So Neymar can kick almost with the same power in the right and the left legs.
Mm.
Not as a Pelé did, but I think Neymar with more conscious about, you know, be a popcorn.
Mm.
He is a great talent. One day I think he can be the number one soccer player in the world. I think so. And they both together, no team is unbeatable, but will be very hard to beat Barcelona. At the same time, it's the same thing if you put Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson at the same team.
Mm-hmm.
You can beat them on a bad night, but only on a bad night, you know.
And last question, World Cup is coming here next year. There's been a lot of talk about some of the stadiums are not ready. Any truth to that?
No, Confederation Cup, semi stadium. Now all the stadiums are ready, but on the areas, the streets, the convenience, is not ready yet for the Confederation Cup next month.
Mm-hmm.
Semi cities are, like Brazil and Rio, we have little details can fix. Fortaleza, I think, can fix, but a semi cities not. I think Confederation Cup, as a Brazilian, could be almost a fiasco in terms of organizing. But the world,
they'll be ready.
We'll be ready.
Brazil's got really happy. First Latin American country to have the Olympics. It's no question, having the Olympics in Brazil, Rio de Janeiro is the place it should be.
I think for working, make work like paying work is better, São Paulo.
Really?
But Rio is more is the most international city.
Mm-hmm.
They are almost competent as the São Paulo people, and they are more beautiful city.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to learn a lot of things from the Confederation Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Some things is not too good yet, like signs on the streets to go to the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
They put now for the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
So when the World Cup is coming, they will be good, and I think they will make a great Olympic Games because they learn from them. You know,
Vi Corinthians
and Vi Corinthians, yes, sir.
One more time, Billy Paul's date was
11 São Paulo at the Bourbon Street Music Club, 12 in Rio de Janeiro at the Barra Music Club or venue, 14 in Fortaleza at BNB Club, 15 in Brasília at Shopping Iguatemi, and 18 at the Flamboyant Shopping. In Goiânia.
One more time, we want to thank Sally Braza.
Oh, always, Sally Braza, Tabajara Hotel, Marina Park Hotel, you know.
Chipito.
DCJ's Productions. We are proud to have Stanley here do this radio program from Fortaleza, Brazil at DCJ's Studios to all over the world. I'm proud to have you here, and it's always a pleasure. And always say, to my church at Harlem, Pilgrim Baptist Church. I love you guys, and I love our mother, right?
Yeah, mom. Black Stanley, Black Talk Radio on the Custom Garden Network, International Promoter, that's on the day show, Costa Macho Jr. Billy Paul will be in town. Day show, as I told you, his son Malcolm is the godson of Billy Paul, and he's worked very hard to get this going. He also brings other action, Air Supply, Ziggy Marley, Gloria Gaynor, and he's working on the very big ones, some other ones. So stay tuned. Fox Family, Blog Talk, Radio, Trust, and Government Network. Gang, let's talk sweet science. I said, let's go back to the board again. Mayweather, Alvarez, that fight is made. We're saluting Grant Hill and his retirement.
We're
saying, get well. Mookie Blaylock, Tiger Woods, hoping things worked out for you there at the Memorial. Vernon Hopkins will be defending his title next month. The Barclays Center. We're also taking the fact that we're saying once again, happy birthday to the Hoopster who has a birthday today or tomorrow. We also want to turn around and send again good well wishes to Arian Barkley. He had a heart attack a couple weeks ago. Haven't heard any more about that. Hoping Larry Holmes is still a well and alive, as is Ken Norton. Okay, with that, we've got us a good half hour left if the gang wants to stay. It's Doc Stanley, Sports Depth, Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. You got to updates there on the world of soccer. I was missing a game there. England had took a 2-1 lead. Brazil came back to tie it 2-2. A lot of people are not happy. Two of the veteran players, two of the stellar players were left off the team. Kaká and Ronald Dingo, who at one time was number one player in the world. Goalkeepers-wise, I haven't seen a better one than the one at Santos, who played with Neymar, and also my team, Corinthians, their goalkeeper. The coach here, as Desio said, seems to be not wanting so much guys of experience and talent as being able to control. Pelé the other day spoke about that if there are any deficiencies and shortcomings in this Brazilian team, you can't put all the fault on Neymar because Neymar doesn't have the supporting cast that really, the best supporting cast that he possibly could have. And that's been the problem. And today with a 2-2 draw with England, it wasn't a loss, but it wasn't really a total victory. Brazil tied the game, England come back and took the lead, and Brazil was lucky within 2 minute span before the game was over to tie the game up. A lot of people are not happy with the opening of the legendary stadium that at one time held over 200,000 people. They cut it down to 78,000, and it was been no. Desio, one more time. The name of the they played at a the stadium. What's the name of the stadium they played today? Used to have 200,000 people.
Maracanã.
Mm-hmm.
Maracanã. It used to be the biggest stadium in the world. 200,000 people.
And they cut it down to how many?
78,000
people. Yeah. And so that was the opening today. Frank Sinatra played there. Over 200,000 people came out to see Frank Sinatra. Frank inadvertently said it was the biggest moment in his entertainment life. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio, Trusting Guardian Network, live from Fortaleza, Brazil, capital city of the state of Ceará. Fortaleza will be one of the cities that will have World Cup play here next year. Their stadium is done. They're set ready to go. They'll play some other games in Sao Paulo. The World Cup will end, championship game, of course, in Rio de Janeiro. Brazil, the only team to win the World Cup 5 times, Pelé, a 3-time World Cup winner, back-to-back in 58 and 62. And the relationship when they won in Mexico was so deep that Brazil has a bridge named after a Mexican street and city, as the brotherly love and camaraderie was displayed there. Going back to the board one more time, like we said, we looked across the board. Neymar, Santos, got to always talk about Pelé. And we told you Bernard Hopkins is going to be back in the ring. Mayweather, Alvarez.
Doc, let me ask you about a fight. I wanted to ask you, Doc, about a fight. Pardon me, cutting you off. That is Lady A still with us?
Yeah, I wanted
to ask you about a fight, Doc, that Lady A is very excited about. It's not going to last long. It'll probably be bombs away while it lasts, as these two guys are very aggressive and throw a lot of punches. I believe it's with Jose Cito Lopez and what is it, Miss Donna?
She's been talking about that fight since they thought about the fight, more or less when they made it. When they thought about that fight, she's been talking about that fight. She said that. Now, that's nothing but, hold on, wait a minute, gang. Madison Square Garden, my man Larry Torres sent me an email the other day. Are you ready for this duo of sportscasters? Mark Breland and John Duddy. Friday night fights on MSG with Breland and Duddy as your sportscasters. Some of the fights they're going to bring, they're going to do the Pryor Aguayo fight 2, among of the storied, renowned fights in boxing history. Larry Torres, Mr. T, thanks a lot. Madison Square Garden, Friday night fight, and your sportscasters will be the greatest amateur fighter in the history of boxing, Mark Breland, 110-1, and the exciting and probably the Irish. Could Lady A, could we say the Irish Arturo Gatti and John Duddy? Lady A?
I don't know, we may have lost A.
No, she still was. I think she just stepped out of the studio for a second.
But in any event, Doc, let me just say this, okay? Since you were talking about the health issues with Iran Barkley, you know, you don't hear about really tough guys that used to fight in this era. Back in the day, legitimate tough guys like Iran Barkley. And there's another guy, Doc, and I know you'll say, I remember. But nobody ever talks about a guy by the name of Iran, the real, Glenwood, the real Beast Brown. The real Beast Brown, Glenwood Brown.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's tough guys that, I'm sorry, Doc, go ahead.
A guy from back, Glenwood, the real Beast Brown. You remember Animal Fletcher?
Frank the Animal Fletcher, of course.
Just another tough guy, hitting guy. You know, guys who
Hey, Doc, and a guy by the name that no one ever heard of before named Vampire Johnson.
Vampire Johnson. I remember the boxing mailman. Remember the boxing postman?
No, Doc, he escapes me. No, I'm not sure who that is. No, I really don't.
Yeah, and we also had, here's another great name for you, Tom the Bomb Bethea. Remember him?
Right, him I remember. And I also remember, Doc, a guy, I'm trying to think of his name now. One day, Hal Weston was on and had us literally tears coming out of our eyes. Something the Mouse Strauss. I can't think of his first name. Was it Lenny the Mouse Strauss? Something the Mouse Strauss.
Yeah. That's the guy that everybody knocked out. Everybody knocked him out.
Right. His claim to fame, Doc, was that he's been knocked out on every continent on the globe, and they came damn close to it.
That's like saying that there's not a prison I haven't been in the world. You know what I mean?
Well, it's true, Doc. I mean, the guy's been knocked out on the continent of Africa, Europe, the Outback. I mean, you name it, this guy's been knocked out there. I mean, Lenny the Mouse Strauss, I think it is. It's legit.
Okay, well, like I said, in his case, you can't say only in America. You know what I mean? My goodness. Doc Stanley, Talk Radio.
Hey, let me ask you one more thing before you do the ID. Before you do the ID, just one more thing, Doc. I know that you know and obviously an expert on these things. How much pressure was on Joe Louis in the second Schmeling fight when Hitler was trying to use the whole German we're superior thing and the whole thing? Has there ever been more pressure outside of that fight on any other athlete, Doc, that you can think of to win any type of sporting event? I know there's been a lot of pressure on LeBron before he won the championship, and actually there's a lot of pressure on him to win.
What you're talking about is unequivocally the highest amount of pressure, especially in lieu of the fact that, you know, Schmeling was very close to getting the title shot against Braddock, you know, and when Schmeling and Louis fought the first time, you know, Louis was undefeated, Schmeling knocked him out, and Schmeling won a lot of the crowd over, and there was some talk of Schmeling getting the title shot against Braddock over Louis simply because he was white and Joe was black. I mean, the pressure that Joe had was insurmountable. You know, Joe and Sugar Ray Robinson were big advocates of desegregating the military. You know, Sugar Ray had an exhibition, and he had already said that the populace of the African Americans would be there and up front. And when he went out and didn't see him, he went back and said, "Hey, look, when I come back out there, they better be out there. I'm not coming back out there." I mean, Joe was such a revered and loved figure, but you know, never was it lost the fact that he was African American. I remember what the late great Eddie Robinson told me, and we have also in the Trust in God Sports and Death Entertainment Artifacts Hall of Fame Museum autographed posters by Mr. Robinson. And I'll never forget what Mr. Robinson told me about the fight that night. He said, "Listen to the fight." I remember Art Russ talked about coming down the street one day in Harlem, and there was these police officers out in uniform, and there was some streets areas blocked off, and he asked the officer, "You know, what's happening?" And the officer looked down and said, "Don't you know, young man, Joe Louis is fighting tonight." And Eddie Robinson told me, "Listen to the radio, heard the announcer said, and the American Joe Louis is coming into the ring." Mr. Robinson told me that was the first time he ever heard a black man called an American. The pressure was insurmountable. And, you know, it was put on both of them. I mean, Schmeling had a lot of pressure on him, too. Both of the guys, great human beings, both of the guys didn't see it as a racial situation as they became friends. But Schmeling had a lot of pressure on him, too. You know, you talk about pressure. A lot of people don't know that Adidas, you know, the first three letters is the name of one of the two brothers who brought Adidas sneakers brought him in. And what happened is that the brothers had a falling out. And with that, the brother who left was the one who designed and came up with Pumas. The historic part from an African-American standpoint of view is that the brother approached Jesse Owens in the Olympics and asked Jesse, would he wear his sneaker? And the white shoes you saw Jesse use in the films are Jesse wearing Adidas track shoes, first time ever worn and ever used by an athlete, especially African-American. So Jesse Owens was the first African-American and first track star to wear Adidas. As you notice, they're the white shoes that he wears anytime you see the footage. And it was a special plea that Idy, one of the two brothers from the company Adidas, I think the second name, the other brother's name, appealed, asked Jesse to wear the track shoe, and the rest of his history, the four gold medals. They had a falling out, and with that, the brother left, and he's the one that started Puma, which Walt Frazier, if you look back, it wasn't Michael Jordan, but Walt Frazier was the first athlete that came about and brought about a sneaker that children or kids wore, black, white, green, or yellow. I think the funny thing about that is Clyde said, you know, they gave him the sneakers and $5,000, which was a nice amount of money back then. You know what Jordan did. Yeah, with Nike. You know, Magic Johnson had appealed to Converse's to come out with a sneaker called Docs for Dr. J. And supposedly they had made the comment that they didn't believe an athlete could sell a sneaker. Well, we can see that reminds me a lot of the foresight that the Beatles, I think, had went to Decca Records and the if I have the wrong company, forgive me, but the point is that whoever they went to, they had made the comment that are you ready for this, Rudy? That guitar groups were going out of style. They said that guitar groups was going out of style, wasn't in vogue anymore, you know. And they didn't sign the Beatles.
You kidding? I'm something off you just quickly. I know we're running out of time.
Sure.
You know, there was, you know, since you're talking about athletes and sneakers and what have you, and you mentioned Clyde and what have you. You know, I remember being at the Garden one time, Doc, and you know, this reminds me when you're talking about Grant Hill and how his career was, you know, shortened from the greatness that, you know, obviously he would have attained had he been able to have a very healthy and long career. But, you know, it just reminded me that I remember seeing this guy as a rookie. Me and my dad were at Madison Square Garden, and this kid was lighting it up. I can't remember who he played for, and the team lost. The Knicks beat them that night, but this kid was a rookie, and he was lighting it up, Doc. Doc, and I know you know who this is. Doc, give me your impressions of this guy, because, like I said, he was a rookie, and a knee injury cut his career short, and you never got to see the greatness of what this kid could be. But that night, my dad and I watched Clark Kellogg just light it up, Doc.
Yeah, you know, he had, you're right, he could play, and you like the name he had, you know, Clark Kellogg. It would have worked. But, you know, injuries, I mean, it just, people don't know, as great as Elgin Baylor was, how much greater he could have been. But, you know, he had some, you know, some knee problems, and had they been able to handle things then like they do now. But, you know, 27 points, 13 rebounds a game, come on. Then you look at the fact, you know, when they did the first great starting five of the first 35 years, the two foes were Elgin Baylor and Bob Pettit. Pettit, 26 points, 16 rebounds a game. 26, 16.
Well, let me tell you about a guy, Doc, and you can speak on that. Well, I know you've seen him up close and personal. And, Doc, when I heard this, I was shocked that this guy actually couldn't palm the basketball. That, you know, most NBA ball players, you know, have those big hands. But I was shocked to understand, Doc, that the great, and Doc, let me tell you what happened just quickly. Well, I'm watching this game at the, I think, the 33rd and 8th Street part of the garden with one of the sports guys from the Amsterdam News. And obviously, you know, you were there. And I think you were seated, obviously, in the first couple of rows, as only the big names are. But anyway, anyway, I'm watching this game with one of the guys from the Amsterdam, Doc. And we're watching the practices. The guys come up for the layup line before the game starts. And this guy is getting a standing ovation from his dunk from the layup line. This is ridiculous stuff. Dr. J kind of stuff, Doc. It turned out to be none. You know, I just had the name on the tip of my tongue, and I know
Thompson.
Our audience is going
David
to.
Thompson.
It turned out to be
David
oh
Thompson.
My God.
David Thompson.
David, thank you, Doc. David Thompson. Yes.
Yeah,
and the thing that this guy was doing, that this guy was so far over the rim, it was ridiculous.
It was amazing. That, I mean, because too, that Thompson couldn't palm the ball. Neither could Walt
right,
Frazier. Walt Frazier, another one.
Walt Frazier couldn't push out the neck line, Doc. And he looked like a pretty. I mean, the guy's legit 6'3", 6'4". Clyde.
Yeah. But, you know, the first basket he scored in Madison Square Garden was a dunk. And I remember he talked about the caliber of play in the NBA and the ABA, and he talked about how really much better the ABA was. He said, you know, my first in the ABA, I made second team, all ABA, and, you know, the team, we came second in division. He said, our first year in the NBA, I made first team all NBA, and our team won the division. And with that, we're going to let you, Moni. You can close us out here, Winnie. Give us our closing music.
Well, Doc, as usual, the Sports In Depth Nation's been here. The Sports In Depth panel's been here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I've been here. We've been here courtesy of the Trust in God, the Radio Network. The Straw That Stirs the Drink has been here. And that's been the incomparable Doc family. Thank you, Doc.
Don't move, Mooney. Very hard to have something to say.
Thank you for joining us for this installment of Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. We hope you join us, and please tell a friend about Sports in Depth, heard every Wednesday and Friday from 12.
With that, with a little wrap, we continue to keep Blaylock in prayer. We salute the great Grant Hill for being one of the class acts of sports and a credit to our society. We say Alvarez and Mayweather, we're happy that's going to happen, and we're just going to keep seeing things, we're going to keep talking about that. Bernard Hopkins comes back to defend his title next month, birthday-wise, this month. We say happy birthday to Hoopster, Eric. Dennis Ujita has a birthday this month. Remember, also, you're going to name it. His birthday is 8th month, and he passed away about a week.
Thank you.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time
when the world won't be singing.
When the world won't be singing.
Flowers won't grow.
Flowers won't grow. No.
Bells won't be ringing.
No bells won't be ringing.
Who really cares?
Who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try?
To save a world.
To save a world.
That's destined to
that
die.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world.
When I look at the world.
It fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today.
Children today.
Really gonna suffer tomorrow.
Really suffer tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame.
What a shame.
Such a bad way to
such
live.
Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
When we can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
Live.
Live for life.
Live for life. Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
You see, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
Save the babies. Save the babies. And if you want to live, but who really cares?